Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
We're presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Dan for a special offer when you sign up. That's code Dan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Ben, one of the many reasons that I wanted to talk to you is because it's a special kind of mind bleep to be as excellent as you've been at something for as long as you have been. A decade undefeated, a wrestling champion of the highest order. And perhaps sports fans who are casual sports fans know you being introduced to the mainstream outside of UFC by what happened with Masvidal and then fighting a famous Paul. But I want to talk to you and show the audience how hard it was to be you, the level of skill and will and commitment that it requires to get to the top of the fighting sports, because you were an uncommon champion, never lost at wrestling, right? You went when I say never lost, you went a decade where you were dominating wrestling.
So I went 9 years in fighting without losing. Really, in wrestling, it was just my last 2 years. So I went 87-0 my last 2 years of college. My first 2 years, I didn't lose a lot, but I was in the NCAA finals both years and lost to the same guy my freshman and sophomore year. And then my last 2 years, I went undefeated. But then, you know, wrestling is a humbling sport. And that's kind of why I think I dealt with losing later in my life so well, is because early in my life, I wasn't good at all. And I said, I want to be good. And so I just kept showing up and competing over and over and over again. And I would just get better and better and better. But even after I went 87-0 in my college career, I wanted to make the world team that year. And then 2007 and then 2008, my goal was to make the Olympic team. In 2007, I came up short, right? I lost, I took fifth at the world team trials. And so that's kind of, it's four spots away, right? You got to be number one. So
you're still one of the most feared grapplers and fifth. The difference between fifth and one is what at that level of sport?
Sometimes, right? So for me, I was able to make up that gap, but sometimes it's kind of like a lot, right? If you look at some of the number ones we have in America for wrestling right now, the number fives don't stand a chance. Right. So in certain instances, it can definitely be a lot. I mean, that's a high level, but at the high level, sometimes these guys just, they go kind of over and above, like they're, I don't say almost unbeatable, but.
But you were.
Yeah. Yeah. So and then obviously the next year, I made the Olympic team in 2008. I came up a little short at the Olympics. And after that, I decided to make the transition to mixed martial arts, because at that point in time, wrestlers weren't making any money. And I knew I wanted to have a family and a career. And MMA was kind of. It was just starting to kick off, right? Because we had the MMA started in 93. Then you had the kind of dark era where it was deregulated everywhere. And then Zuffa bought it. And then you had Tough. And so it was starting to like that upward trajectory of where it would go. And so that was kind of something I wanted to do.
Before we get into why you've written the book and what you've written in the book, when you say you lost a lot early.
Yeah.
You knew this was the path for you at before 11 years old, right? I've read about you losing 25% of your body weight at 11 years old because you were so committed to being good at this. So when do you first remember, this is what I want to do? This is who I am.
That's a great question. In fifth grade, I remember I really liked baseball, but I decided to quit because I wanted to wrestle more, because I wanted to be good. I wanted to be better, right? I wasn't having a lot of success. And then obviously I quit and I started getting better. I was overweight also, and I decided I didn't want that to be the case. So I went from 130 pounds to 100 pounds in sixth grade, which, you know, now I look back and like, for an 11-year-old to make that decision on his own, it wasn't my parents, it was me. It's kind of crazy, right?
Well, you guys have to be, don't you? Weight cutting in general. The act of choosing weight cutting is an insanity.
But for me, that weight loss, that wasn't weight cutting, right? When I think of weight cutting, it's like, what do you do in the couple of days prior to the weigh-in to make weight, you know, sweating, all the other stuff. For me, that was just, I was heavier, and I chose a healthier lifestyle. And I lost a lot of weight, so I went down to 100 pounds. And I didn't get back up to 130 again till 10th grade. But I quit football in ninth grade because I knew all I wanted to do at that point was wrestle. I just wanted to be really good. And there was not really, it was kind of like hard to wrestle year round at that point because there wasn't any year round clubs. So I kind of had to find things and piece it together. And I started getting better in the year 2000. I was in 10th grade and I was to the point where I was good at a state level. I was winning state titles. But from a national perspective, I was having success. And I went and saw the Olympic trials in Dallas. And I said, I want to be an Olympian. That's what I want to do. And it was a little bit insane for me to say that at the time, but it was like I really felt that was what was
what was it about? Was it the energy? What were you feeling there?
Yeah, so I saw those guys making the team, and I, you know, you kind of like feel the emotion of what that's like, you know. And then obviously I was able to experience this eight years later, and it's like it's an emotion that's hard to put into words. It's when you've put that much time into something, right, and you've been dreaming of it, and then in that one moment, you have that dream come to reality, and you're like, oh my God, I've dreamed about this for 8 years, and it just came true.
What was it, love at first sight for you? And that in you walk yes. into that just like that.
Yeah, it was because I was at the point where I was taking it really seriously. I was starting to get better, and I saw those guys make the Olympic team, and that's the pinnacle of amateur wrestling, right? Is making a United States Olympic team. Yeah, and I saw those guys make the team. I said, oh my God, that's what I want to do.
How introspective have you been about what the roots are that make you seek physical contact, choosing a sport that hurts?
That's funny. Well, I have two girls and then I have a boy, and all my four-year-old wants to, all he does is, hey, Dad, can we go battle? All he wants to do is fight. So
you think it's DNA?
I think there's something in there, yeah. I think there is. Because, I love football. You know, football is a contact sport. I loved wrestling kind of, you know, from an early age, even when I wasn't good at it, I kind of really, really enjoyed it. And there's just something about that, you know, whether it's jiu-jitsu or fighting, I kind of just really love those contact sports.
But you haven't answered my question about the roots, like what was going on in your childhood? I mean, you kind of answered my question if you're saying you were just born to do this.
Yes. So my son, since age of two, He doesn't wrestle. He did soccer this fall, but all he wants to do is battle. And you know, that's like punching, kicking. Obviously, I don't hit him hard, right? But, you know, like he wants to fight. He wants to wrestle. Sometimes it's, you know, he grabs like a noodle and it's a weapon, right? And he's got a weapon and he's trying to hit me. But yeah, he wants to fight. And so I think I think the same way. I think it's, you know, battling is fun. I've always kind of enjoyed it. So yeah, I think it's probably, honestly, all right, if you want to go real deep, I think we all have that inside of us. And I think for a lot of people, it's bred out of them by, it's kind of illogical thoughts that, you know, pain is bad or losing is bad. And I think, you know, actually I was just reading Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, some old school philosophy. And it, wrestling
some
is
some gladiator shit.
But wrestling is brought up between 6 and 8 times. I mean, it is human to wrestle, right? To grab someone and try to throw them on the ground. It's human. So, I think from a young age, if you go watch little kids, and before they're told not to in school, they will grab each other and try to throw each other on the ground. It's just natural.
And you are telling me that it is something innate that either needs to be fed or repressed. And in your case, you fed it.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And my dad was kind of good about that. And, you know, he wasn't like a wrestler. Like he did kind of all the sports in high school and kind of like wrestling. But I mean, obviously, you don't want some kid who goes and beats up all the other weaker kids on the playground. But in my son's case, if he wants to battle with someone, like, and they both want to go at it, then cool, let's battle
a little
bit.
But if you've thought about this philosophically, if you've thought about it meditatively, tell me then what your counterculture philosophies are on pain and pain management and running toward fear instead of away from it.
Yeah, but pain is nothing. Like my daughter got a splinter yesterday when she was climbing a rope, and she was so fearful about getting it pulled out. And it's like, it's not going to be a big deal. Just pull it out, you know? But then I was thinking the other day, this one kid who was older, he got a cut, right? He bumped heads and he was kind of flipping out about it a little bit, you know? And it's like, but I've been there, right? I've had that happen between fighting and wrestling, I don't know, 8 times, 10 times. Like if you're actually in the moment, actually doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt at all.
Because
right?
of the adrenaline?
I don't know if it's adrenaline or just like, it just literally doesn't hurt. It just doesn't hurt. I don't know. And so if there's, you know, but there's something that is telling you there's blood coming and you should be emotional about that. And you almost build it up to be more than it actually is.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
You basically are saying that over time you have made your body scarred enough that you don't feel pain, that pain is not a thing.
Oh, well, no, there are certain things that are painful, but there's a lot of things that aren't painful that they anticipate is going to be, and so they freak out about it before they actually really feel it. Does that make sense or no?
No, you don't sound crazy, but when I've talked to fighters about consequences or warriors consequences, what they tend to tell me is I wouldn't be a warrior if I sat around thinking about consequences all the time. I need to be someone who develops an armor so that pain isn't actually a thing, that I can outwill my pain, that I can be somebody who is stronger than what I believe my mental frailties
are. Yeah, and I mean, honestly, well, pain is just it's a point of information for us, right? And there are some points where we should probably say, I probably shouldn't push my body any further and I should probably stop. But then there's other places where we've been there. You know, I think I kind of relate to the first time kids do really, really hard workouts. And so, you know, with our wrestling academy, we don't really push kids when they're younger. So when they get a little older and we start pushing them, there's a natural pushback. I feel pain. I feel exhaustion. I don't want to go further, right? But because I've been there hundreds of times, I know we can go a little further, right? So I can't take them from 1 to 100 in the first workout, but I can take them to 3 and they're like, oh man, that was hard. And then you go to the next one and you go to the next one, you know? And when you've been through these things so many times, you realize pain is just kind of a signal to the brain, and you can kind of ignore it and get unemotional about it.
What else did you learn in reading whatever it is that was the wisdom that Marcus Aurelius had to impart?
You know what I thought? I kept thinking actually was that if someone would have told you this was a modern day philosopher, you probably could have accepted that. And I think that's fascinating because the guy wrote it thousands of years ago. And, you know, the human condition is the human condition, right? We are kind of the same. And everyone likes to think like, oh, this next generation, they're so screwed because of social media or whatever, right? But when you read what he was writing, it's like, wait, human beings were kind of the same. And that was like thousands of years ago. So I think the human condition is the human condition.
What can you tell us about the extremes that you will go to in wrestling to, for example, cut weight or what are the examples you'd give the audience about where the obsession probably goes too far for them, but not for you?
Interesting. Well, I would say, and I guess kind of this would tie into the Marcus Aurelius, because another thought I had is like, you know, there's a lot of people who want things easy, but when you get to somewhere hard, you realize that nothing easy can be that good, because if it's that easy, then everyone's going to get it, right? So in order to achieve something great, you're going to have to do something that's hard. And so don't fear that hard thing, accept that the hard thing's going to happen, and maybe even you embrace it, right? And so I think when I was super obsessive about being great at wrestling, I was willing to push myself further and harder and just be there every single day. So the consistency of continuing to show up over and over and over again for years on end, you know, the Olympic thing, that was 8 years. But
and fight everyone off, because it's always young people who are similarly minded who want your shit.
Yeah. But even in, you say building a business, you know, people want it to be easy. They want some get rich quick scheme. And it's like, no, if you want to build something great, you have to show up and you have to do the right things day after day after day after day for years, probably, in order to build something that's great. In order to achieve something, you got to keep doing hard things all the time.
That's general. How about specific? What are the details? Give me an example of the worst weight cut. Because showing up in wrestling is not like me punching a clock and showing up for, you know, my job as a grocery store manager.
I would say, you know, it's funny. So my high school wrestling coach, he now works with us at Ashland Wrestling Academy. And it's funny because I think his philosophy on coaching wrestling probably has changed since then. And we still obviously do hard things, but he made us do some extremely hard things. And, you know, I think that kind of hardened the mind. So I think we would wrestle for 2 hours straight live, which, you know, now we don't. And I don't think it's necessary to make elite level competitors, but we probably don't go over 30 minutes. And so that made us like so grizzled and so tough to what we were going to experience within a 6 minute match that we could just keep pushing and pushing and pushing. And that, you know, that kind of carried over my fighting is like, Fighting someone for 25 minutes is a long freaking...
It's unbelievable.
It's so long.
It's unbelievable. Yes. People do not understand who are watching you to be elevated at that level of survival of the fittest, adrenaline intensity, where you are just tapping into something primal. Yeah. People have no idea what kind of shape you have to be to go 25 minutes. And 2 hours is an insanity. Yeah. Your coach was crazy.
He really was at that point. So, but it made us tough. And he made a lot of good wrestlers there. And then, you know, I think like any smart person, he evolved. His thought process where we don't need that things all the time, but maybe once in a while to ensure we're that tough. Fighting someone for 25 minutes, I actually like, part of me says they don't need to be 25 minutes long to figure it out. Like a wrestling match, for example, at the world level is 6 minutes. And some of these foreign dudes who aren't, they're elite, but sometimes they're not in great shape. Like you see them get so tired in 6 minutes that they're ready to fall over. So then the notion that a fighting contest has to be 25 minutes is kind of like, well, do we really need that longer? Could we shorten it up? And maybe we'd even get better action because no one can go hard for 25 minutes, you know, and everyone knows that. So they're like, well, okay, well, I need to be as calculated as possible about where I'm using my energy. You know, and I describe this to kids because I say certain kids are scared of getting tired in a wrestling match. And I said, you need to accept the fact that you're tired. If I made you do burpees or hang cleans or sprint, you couldn't sprint for 6 minutes straight. It's impossible. Actually, the human body can sprint for 4 seconds. That's it, you know? So we can achieve maximum output for 4 seconds. So the notion that we're able to do for 6 minutes is unfeasible. So you're going to get tired, right? And so like in a 25-minute fight, you really have to know like how to calculate your energy output and where to push hard and where to pull back a little bit. So I actually think kind of if we shorten the fights up a little bit, we would probably have maybe more condensed action because people would go like, okay, I know I don't have to last 25 minutes, so I can go a little harder right now.
If I put in front of you some alien from another planet and asked you to explain to that alien how tough you are.
Uh-huh.
What are the examples you would use? Because I think I just
try. If you really want me, I mean, I don't think I would have to explain that, but I think we just grab them and we try to battle.
You just explain it to them with your battle. Body. Better to explain it with your body than with your mouth. But the reason I keep bringing it up, I think your normal, the audience listening to this, doesn't understand that your normal is abnormal. I don't know what your ears look like. You're wearing headphones. But if you're a wrestler, you've got the cauliflower ears because your ears have been beaten so much that they don't even feel pain at this point, correct? Nothing.
Yeah.
I could do anything to your ears, and they're so calcified that I would not harm you in any way just because you've been taking beatings for your entire life.
And then when you say like describe in language toughness, I think the guys who try to talk about how tough they are really aren't that tough, you know. And the guys who you think are really tough are those guys you've been in a college wrestling room with for 5 years and they've gone through those things and you've seen the way they've reacted to that insanely hard workout, right? Or you've seen that guy in a fight. Like there's no way someone could describe to you their toughness. And it'll be more compelling than you watching them fight and you go, holy shit, like, how's that dude still battling? Like, they've been battling for, you know, 4 rounds and he's still going at it and his eyes swollen up and, you know, he's got leg kicked a whole bunch of times and he's still moving forward. Like, there's no way you can describe that in language. You just got to see someone go at it.
Well, you have the face of a wrestler. Like, you've got the skull of a wrestler. Like, I feel like if I hit you, it would hurt my hand.
My wife always, with these the brown, we're on video, but the brow line right there, my wife always, she jokes. She said, are people with the brow line like that, are they drawn to wrestling or do you get it from wrestling?
When I talk to rock climbers who do that because of the fear of death, because it's just elevated. There's nothing like it, right? To be stripped down to it's just me and I've got to make a career this way with my body as a challenge. Do you always look for places where the degree of difficulty is off the charts, or is this just unique to your career choice?
No, I think like I said earlier, easy things aren't fun, right? Easy things aren't fun at all. Whether it's building business or picking a sport, I think the things that really give you life, and maybe it's because I started out this way, and now I don't know any other way, and I can't live normally. You need to feel that tension of like, are you going to make it or are you not going to make it?
What's your relationship with fear?
Fear. It's not a useful emotion. Well, you know, in primitive life, if we go back to primitive life, fear told us a lot because there was no safety nets on our survival, right? Whether it was a puma trying to attack us or a neighboring tribe or whatever. So maybe fear was more useful. But in my everyday life, there's not really anywhere where I'm going to die, right? it'd be pretty rare in our circumstances in the United States of America that there's an actual instance where we could die. And so it's kind of useless, right? And that's why I said, like, my daughter yesterday with the fear, her fear of me taking a sliver out of her hand was completely illogical, because the reality was it was going to take 1.5 seconds to pull it out, and then there wouldn't be any pain at all because the sliver would be gone. Right. So most people, I think they let fear dictate a little too much. And in our present day circumstances, fear is kind of not all that useful.
How has it changed over the years? There must have been a time where fear was present and you didn't realize with awareness that it was useless, that you were just afraid.
I don't know. Actually, I think from a young age, I just wanted to battle.
Oh, so like your son. So you're saying from four years old or whatever, if I win or I lose, it's temporary. I enjoy the spirit of the fight.
So I cannot remember that early in my life, right? But I do remember, you know, like I think probably fourth, fifth, sixth grade, and is probably where I start like having a real remembrance. Actually, I talk about in my book, Tomorrow's Coming Out. One of the things that drew me to wrestling. There's two instances, one in soccer and one in football. And one in soccer, it was because it was Wisconsin in the fall and it was shitty and it was rainy and cold and the team didn't want to be out there, right? And I'm like, and I'm not even good at soccer, but I want to win. I'm trying to play soccer here and you guys are all being babies, you know? And then in football, it was the other team was kicking our butt and they were really good. And they never wanted to concede. They wanted to give up. And it's like, no, I'm trying to freaking play football here. I'm trying to win and you guys are all quitting. You know, I don't want to quit. And so, like, those things drew me to wrestling because I knew in wrestling, like I said earlier, it was me and the other person. And we shake hands and we're going to battle and that's it, you know? And so that really drew me to wrestling, that self-reliance that, like, I didn't have to worry about anyone else. So, you know, I don't really.
You like not having teammates?
Yes.
You like not having to rely on someone being as willful and as crazy as you. You're responsible. Self-wise. You're responsible for yourself. Yeah. You are accountable to only yourself. Yeah. You like the self-sufficiency of that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, and my son actually, you know, he maybe lacks the necessary fear because sometimes I know, like, you know, they like to play this game called Monster where, like, I'm the monster, right? And then him or his friends or him and my daughters are, you know, I'm trying to chase them. And sometimes, like, when I really scare him, when I jump out, I'm like, ah, right from me on the corner, and right there's this fight or flight, his friends all run, and he's like, ah, he tries to fight me, you know? So,
and you like this for him. You see the mirror, and you love that your son has this bit of you in his in his DNA.
I think that is life when you pick fight or flight. Like I said, in current day America, there's not real fear. You know, we don't have alligators trying to, well, you live in Florida, so maybe you got to worry.
Well, alligators, I would say a lot of people are getting shot too, but your larger point is right, that every time we go out, there's not the greatest of fear of survival of the fittest, fight or flight. Yes. We're not challenged like that every day. You'd kind of like to be, it sounds like. It sounds like you would, that it's not living unless it's hard.
Yeah. So if I could, I mean, the one thing I miss most about fighting and competing just in general is like that walk to the cage where, you know, like all of the training's done and you're ready to go fight and the crowd's cheering and you get to go put it all on the line. Like, that's the thing I miss the most, because you don't get that. You don't wake up and, you know, I go to my wrestling podcast in the morning and the crowd's like, and you're like, all right, am I going to freaking get this done or am I not going to get this done?
Well, there's nothing like it. Every athlete who lives, never mind combat sports. Yeah. At the height of the gladiator spectacle, at the height of the self-sufficiency that you speak of, there's nothing like fighting. Yeah. You'll never find anything in life that recreates that. You can jump out of airplanes and everything else. What else would you find that would feel comparable to walking to the octagon?
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time.
Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The book, I should tell the audience, it's a memoir. Funky, My Defiant Path Through the Wild World of Combat Sports. What was defiant about your path?
That I was never willing to just kind of accept the way that things should be. So whether it was, talk about early in my life, I kind of stepped off the beaten path of a wrestler because I had the long hair and I did kind of goofy things. And or in my college career, I created essentially why I got the nickname Funky was I created a lot of these scramble positions because I, and a lot of it was not just because I wanted to, but it was out of necessity. But a lot of people would say, don't do it that way, right? You can't do it that way. No one's ever done it that way. And I said, no, like, I think there's something here. I'm pretty sure. And I followed my gut on it, and I wanted to be who I wanted to be. All the way to my going to mixed martial arts, which was not a super common path at that point, right? And then even all the way in MMA, just kind of continue to be who I am. I think it's huge. I mean, I think there's a lot of guys who get famous and they think they got to act a certain way. But it's like, no, I'm still going to wear sandals. I still love disc golf. And I'm going to talk about whatever the hell I want to talk about.
You know, though, that it's an insane way to choose to make money, right? Fighting other men for money.
I actually tell people it's a terrible job. Don't do it. There's only a couple of people I've ever recommended to fight. So now one is Corey Anderson, who's having high level success. The other is this younger guy named Jordan Newman. He's 4-0 right now. And I think he's really good.
You look at him and you're born for this. You have everything that's needed here.
Yeah. So Corey was a national runner up at a local Division III program and he had a boxing background and he's loved to work hard. Right. And then Jordan, and I only know this because Jordan told me, he said I should look this up. There's an animal that's got a small amygdala. And that means they have a little too much anger, right? And I think he's got a little too much anger. So I mess with him and tell him he's got a small amygdala. But yeah, he loves to fight. And so it was like, you need to go fight. Because I know if I don't encourage you, you're going to do it anyway. So I'm just going to encourage you and help you the best I can.
And you believe your brain chemistry makes you so that you're one of these people, right?
I might have a small amygdala.
Well, but you recognize, you're looking in a mirror somewhere when you look at these two people. You're like, oh, yeah, you need to follow this path. This was my calling, too.
Yes, absolutely.
And you've only met two in your life that are that obviously built like you spiritually. They got to go charge it. Are you built on anger? Or yours isn't?
No, I don't have any anger.
Okay, so, you don't have any anger because you're saying Corey does.
No, Corey, that was Jordan. Someone look up what a small amygdala does for you. Maybe it's lack of fear. Maybe that's what it is. It's just something to that effect.
It is unusual to not have any fear, right? That's not bravado from you.
Yeah.
You're just saying, at this point, you've done it enough, prepared enough, you like it enough. And if walking to the octagon is the height of the human experience in combat sports... you're saying there's nothing to fear there, and even if you did fear, it's useless to fear.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not helpful.
It's useless. Not helpful at all. Worry about the bad things.
Whittingham has looked it up here promptly, and he will tell you whether or not you got the brain chemistry right or not.
What does a small amygdala do?
The amygdala volumes might be a surrogate marker for the personality property of aggressiveness in healthy human
aggressiveness,
beings.
Aggressiveness, I knew I messed
not
up.
Not anger, aggressiveness.
Aggressiveness, that's what it was. I knew I was close.
Okay, so you want a battle, though, is what you're talking about. You want your life is a little emptier if it doesn't have battles in it.
Yeah, I love it.
And then you end up fighting in mixed martial arts for money. What are the scariest parts of that? The doubt that creeps in about, have I made the right career choice financially for my family because of how hard it is to fight other people for money and how shitty Dana White and others are about paying their fighters and taking care of their fighters.
Yeah. No, I don't think I ever had those doubts or anything. I started mixed martial arts and I won the Bellator title 18 months after I stepped in a gym. I had relatively quick success.
And knew you would?
I thought I would for sure. Yeah. I mean, just kind of, I had trained with some other guys who were pretty good at that time and, it kind of felt like I would. And then, obviously the Dana thing, and I hold no grudges or bitterness. Bitterness is also a useless emotion, I think. But 2013, when I left Bellator, I was 12-0 and ranked like 6 in the world and Dana wouldn't sign me. That kind of sucked. But I don't think I felt fear around that. I felt frustration would be, maybe a tiny bit of anger, but probably not too much. It was just like, why in the hell is this not happening? And I still don't have an answer to that to this day.
What are the other useless emotions in your regard?
There's a lot of them. Bitterness is worthless because it affects you more than the person you're bitter to. Envy is another one that's really bad. Jealousy, fear. Yeah, there's a lot of those kind of like I think. Well, I don't know what purpose those would have served historically, right? Fear is an obvious if you go far enough back. But yeah, a lot of those other ones are they're just not good for you.
But you mentioned you're never angry, so you haven't. You've mentioned you don't fight angry.
I don't like no, because fighting angry, I think that often leads to bad decision making. So yeah, so I try to fight the same way, you know, with everything. You try to fight the same way you train, because if you train a certain way every day and then you try to fight a different way, it's like, well, that's different, and you should make it different. You should try to perform at the highest levels possible as frequently as possible when you're in the gym.
Why do you think, if you had to give one reason above all others, that you were such an exceptional fighter?
I hate having to choose one. You're putting me in a tough spot here.
Well, we can go through a few, and then I'll okay. pick one, and we can parse it if you want. But I'm just I want you to tell me what you think made you special.
Well, I'll give you two. I'll try to narrow it down to two. Number one would be consistency, right? So for a period of almost 20 years, I didn't miss practices. I mean, so I got the award every year in high school. I never missed one day of practice. I was never late one day. I didn't miss a day of practice in college. Like, I just didn't miss days of practice ever. I think that's pretty exceptional. I mean, there's probably other people. And then for me specifically, having the ability to use my intellect in a sport that most don't consider intellectual, right? So in wrestling, I kind of created my own style. And even in mixed martial arts, I think I came in with the notion that on the ground, you're fighting jiu-jitsu. And that made me kind of ineffective in my earlier years or not as effective as I should have been. And then I used the folk style wrestling paired with the jiu-jitsu, paired with the striking. And when I was able to put those together in a style that worked for me, I think I became. So I would say using my intellect along with my consistency.
You pride yourself on being a sculptor, a craftsman,
yes.
Somebody who respects the art in mixed martial arts.
Yes. Someone who's able to look at something and say, okay, how does this puzzle go together? How can I be most effective with this? Not just, you know, I guess the people I look down on, and maybe I shouldn't, but it's like in wrestling, hard work is like that's at the top of the mountain, you know? But I think for me, that should be an obvious. And so there's these certain guys who they want to run through this wall so bad, and they're like, hey, there's a door right there. Like, just open the damn door, you know? Like, let's go.
I don't know if you can be more willful than other wrestlers. Obviously, you're talking about perfect attendance, and that is exceptionally willful. But your sport is filled with the willful, correct? Like, you're not fighting a lot of guys who have a lot of surrender in them.
There's a few. Yeah, I mean, it is few and far between who make it to the high levels of either mixed martial arts or wrestling on skill alone, right? And they don't get tested. And then when they do get tested, when they meet someone who's equally as skillful, they fold a little bit. But usually, yes, those type of people are generally weeded out before they get to the top.
What would you regard, just as I try to take the audience through some of the extremes of wrestling that you probably don't think are extreme because you've lived them for so long? You're cutting the worst of weight. Put us there. The worst of weight. Yeah. The worst of the experience.
Okay. So the weight cutting, you come back to this a few times. I always recommend, we coach kids, I recommend the high school kids don't cut weight at all, really. Right? They have to make weight 20 times over the course of a high school season. So I think weight cutting and high school wrestling, like, it's out. You shouldn't be doing it. You should be lean, healthy, and wrestling wherever you're at. Now, for fighting, it's different. Number one, you're an adult. Number two, you only have to make weight somewhere between 3 and 4 times a year, maybe 5 max. And then additionally, it's a day before, which is important because high school is an hour before. So you make weight, and an hour later, your competition starts. Well, let's see. The worst one for me ever was when I violated my own rule. So I have this rule where once I get 5 pounds or closer to weight, I will not stop sweating until I make the weight, okay? Because getting your sweat started generally is like a really, really hard part of the battle. So when I was in Dubai, it was when I won the ONE Championship title in 2014. I stopped when I was 1 pound over. I just was feeling like crap, and I caved. I was too weak. I just caved. You know, I'm like, oh, I need a little break. So I gave myself a break, and I could not get that damn last pound off. I mean, it took me probably 90 minutes, you know? And it was almost to the point where I think I quit at like maybe 0.2, and I'm like, all right, I hope the scale's lighter, you know? And then I went over to the official scale, not the scale I had, and it was the same, you know, which I should have known, like a dumbass. and so then I had to go back outside, and we're in Dubai, and it's 115 degrees, and I'm like, got plastics on, and I'm just trying, like, I couldn't run. It was like a shuffle, and luckily I sweated the last 0.2 off. So, because I've never ever missed weight in my whole life, and all of wrestling, fighting, I never missed weight. That goes with that consistency point I made earlier.
What do you regard then as the toughest of the tough when it comes to the things that are hardest to do to get yourself right, so that you can be in championship fighting condition? Because I'm trying to give you, you have to understand, Ben, you're built differently than the people listening to this. Uh-huh. And so it's common to you to just wrap yourself in garbage bags and plastics. and even though you're probably 4 or 5% body fat, you're to still cut weight because you must, because you're weakened and you can't even, you're putting water in your mouth to just swirl it around and then spit it out. You can't drink it. I don't, and I'm just doing weight cutting as an example. If you've got a better one, feel free. But I want people to understand how obsessive you have to be as great as you were.
Yeah. No, I think the tougher thing would be just that the day in and day out grind of whether it's wrestling or fighting or, you know, I mean, there's obviously other sports that are hard also, but
there are days people don't want to go to work.
Yes, absolutely. To show up. Well, the example I always use with like a college wrestling team, for example, if you're on, say, a college football team and you're not the guy, right? They're like, all right, you like go on the sideline and watch these guys take some reps, and maybe we'll give you a few reps later. Like, you're not the guy, go sit over there, you know? And in college wrestling, and this is where I really struggled my redshirt year, is like, if you're not the guy, no, you're the guy that's getting beat up by the guy who's the real guy. You know, he's rubbing your face in the mat every single day. And so that toll, right? The desire or the ability to show back up every single day and know, like, you're probably gonna get your ass kicked a little bit, and then come back the next day. And then come back the next day and just keep trying, keep striving to be better than you were the day before. You know, because for me, I actually told the story this morning, my redshirt year. So by the end of high school, I had achieved a relatively high level of success in high school. And I went to college and I was getting my ass kicked like every single day. And I was like, dude, this sucks. Like, can I really actually be good at this? Like, I'm getting my ass kicked every day. I don't know if I can actually be good at this. And, you know, it's like all fall. And then I go to competitions and I'm not having that much success compared to where I want to be. And it didn't finally click for me until I went home from college to my high school team, and my high school coach, who I'd been really competitive with when I left for college, and all of a sudden it wasn't competitive anymore. It was like, oh, wait, I actually got better. Right? I actually got a lot better. And you see a lot of kids go to college though, and they take that everyday ass kicking and they're like, this isn't for me. I quit, right? Because they were used to being the star of their high school team. And now they go to a Division I program and there's 30 or 40 really high-level wrestlers in the room. And, you know, they might be getting their ass kicked every day. Or certainly some of the days. Maybe not every single day, but a decent amount of days they're getting beat up. And it's like, can they mentally handle that? And can they keep showing up every single day and just keep getting a little bit better and a little bit better? And at some point, boom, it clicks and they get way better.
You mentioned handling losing well or having perspective about losing. How were the minutes, the days, the weeks after Masvidal where you lose in 5 seconds, you have a plan, that can happen to anybody. Yeah. You get caught perfectly and he owes you a finder's fee because you made him a star unlike any that we've seen in the sport. His journey and his story are not common where he's a journeyman, but he got you in that sport.
Yeah.
Anybody can get you once on a moment's notice. It could happen to anybody.
Yeah, agreed. Well, the moments, I don't remember the few moments afterwards. I say I woke up in the hospital, and woke up is not the right term because I was awake the whole time, but my consciousness clicks back in. I saw Luke Rockhold, and I said, oh, fuck, I'm in the hospital because Luke Rockhold got knocked out, you know? I'm like, oh, damn, that's not good, you know? And then my wife comes over, and I'm like, oh, shit, what happened? And but then it was like, hey, I was getting paid to go to an after party, so goddamn it, I was going to go to the after party because that's what I told him I was going to do because I'm consistent, you know? And then, you know, I went and had lunch with all my friends that came to see me the next day, and then, you know what, I'm going back to work on Monday, and I'm going to go coach wrestling, right, because that's what I do. So, you know, I think that, like, the phrase I use, I might need to trademark this, but not tying your ego to the outcome, like especially in fighting. Fighting's crazy. Like anything can happen. So the notion that you're gonna show up and the outcome is guaranteed, that's ridiculous. And so you shouldn't tie yourself, right, or your ego to the outcome of the contest. You're the same person showing up as you are when you leave.
Well, there's great wisdom in that philosophically. Yeah. It's just hard sometimes to get the mind to get that message to your heart.
Well, I think a lot of fighters specifically, and these are the people I know the best, right? They tie how the crowd or how fans feel about them to their own ego. And anytime you do that, it's bad, right? Because the fans are going to go like this, right? You do something good. Oh my God, you're so amazing. You're the greatest. You do something bad. You suck. You're an idiot. You do something good. You're great again, you know? And it's just going to be this wild roller coaster of emotions. So just tying yourself to like, you know what? I work hard. I do good things. I have a family that loves me and I'm going to show up. I'm going to try to fight this dude. Hopefully it goes really well for me, but there's obviously a chance that it doesn't go well for me. And you know what? When it's over, I'm going to go back to regular life and I'm going to go coach practice on Monday because that's what I want to do and move on.
Were you able to avoid all the video of it when you say you woke up when you because you woke up a good you didn't wake up but yeah, you were groggy like, right? You don't, your memory was shot for a good amount of time.
Maybe an hour, 2 hours. I don't know the exact period of time. No, you can't. I mean, I still can't avoid it. I mean, I'll get off this podcast, I'll scroll through Twitter and it'll probably be two people. Right.
It's such a shitty thing though, Ben, because you're so great though.
But that's humans.
You are, but you're such a great fighter to have that, to put in that it is the universe cosmically being funny and making sure that you don't tie your ego to the result. Yeah.
No, that's, I feel like that's so, that's just how humans are. You know, they want to say things and obviously, I'm sure there's thousands of people who respect me and they love me. And there's probably a whole bunch that think like, oh, you got knocked out. You suck. And, you know, there's a lot of it is jealousy and envy that they just want to try to make me feel bad about myself because that happened. But it's like, no, I'm not going to feel bad about myself. I generally like myself. I try to make good decisions in life. I have a family that loves me. I got a lot of kids who want to be coached by me and I try to do right by them.
How long did it take to come by that perspective? Like, did you, were you able in the, you said you had an after party and I'm going to show up because I got a contract to show up. Yeah. And if anything Ben Askren's going to do, his ass is going to show up. Like,
I'm going to show up.
Were able, because that is there is profound wisdom in what you're saying. Yeah. If you can achieve it, a Zen spirituality in look, I've done a lot of winning. Human beings are going to lose. Yeah. Fighters are going to lose. I'm not going to absorb it as part of my ego. I reject it. I know who I am, and it will not be distorted by somebody who likes to laugh or howl at me.
Yeah. I don't know where I originally came up, you know, came upon thinking that way, but my wife thinks it's because I'm partly autistic, and I think there's a possibility in that. But I think it was just because I wasn't that good early, and like I said, I knew if I kept showing up, I was going to take some losses, but I was going to get better. And that was all I was worried about, was just, I just want to get better. I just want to get better. And so I just kept showing up over and over and over again. I mean, in those years, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, 9th grade, I'm probably taking 20, 25 losses a year. So it's not like a big deal. It's like, okay, I lost. What happened? How did I lose? What do I need to get better at? And then just that. And just like knowing that I'm just going to continue to progress over the course of time. So I think probably it relates back to that a lot.
Well, mistakes are just learning in disguise, right? Failure absolutely. Is only learning in disguise.
Yes, if you can take it as that. But some people can't, right? Some people take it too much to the heart. They take it as who they are, not something that happened to them.
Did the fight against Jake Paul pay you a lot more than your excellence did?
Well, I don't know how much excellence pays me. It paid me pretty well. But that one is just like, they asked me to fight, and it's like, I don't know, I kind of like fighting. Like, you know, I relate it back to when I was in high school, and sometimes me and my friends didn't have anything to do on Friday night. I had some boxing gloves at my house, and so we'd all come over and be like, all right, who's fighting who tonight? You know, like you fight you and I'll fight him and this guy fights that guy. And it was like, I don't know, that's like, it's kind of fun, you know? And so now they're going to pay me a whole bunch of money to do that. Like, sure. Okay. Whatever.
So you just, it's just something that you find yourself doing. Did you find yourself, are there many people over the last 15 years who have tried you outside of the octagon?
No, I've never gotten a fight. Zero. I think they just look at my face and they're like, I don't really want to fight that guy or something. Yeah, I don't know.
My hand would hurt if I hit him.
Plus, I don't get angry, so yeah.
What is your wife seeing or feeling when she's telling you that you might be autistic? Like, what is it? What is presenting itself?
Pattern recognition, specified interests, bad in social scenarios with people who do not have shared interests with me. There's kind of a whole bunch of them. So, like, one time she showed me this list. I'm like, oh, I kind of agree with you.
You're interested in the things you're interested in.
As long as those
people who are talking to you, those are going to be your connection points. Most of your friends are probably fighters.
Yes. And like this conversation has been very deep, for example. You just went at it and started going at it. And I love that. Like, I hate small talk, for example. I can't do it. Like, I got to get out of there. Someone starts talking about, like, what the cost of something is at the grocery store. I'm like, I can't be here. I got to get out of here. Like, I need to talk about something like really important and deep or something I'm interested in.
Are you restless if not faced with those things? Like, if not faced with the handful of things that you want in your life, you get impatient?
Yes, very. And I'm very highly impatient, yes.
And your other fighter friends, you find that they're built similarly to you? It's easy to find connection points because...
Yeah. Yeah. Most wrestlers are, And then, you know, obviously it's how I grew up, right? So I grew up, I was on a high school wrestling team. I was on a college wrestling team. A lot of those guys are still my best friends to this day. Then I joined a fighting team, right? Similar people. And now I coach wrestling. So, you know, but it's just those other social scenarios when I get put in them. I'm like, I really struggle.
I don't mean this pejoratively. I mean abnormal, the word abnormal as not normal. And you could counter with what's normal. But I have found in my experience that people who choose fighting are not your normal breed of people, period.
Yeah. I mean, so the other counter to that too would be like, and I think you've said this a few times in this conversation, is like, once you've experienced that, then it's so heightened that it's like everything else feels a little like below that, you know, and you have a hard time relating to that.
I would imagine that everything below that feels a little dead, and I imagine that everything below that can feel a little depressive, right? Because it is as close, I would imagine, I'm speaking for you here, to what heaven on earth would be to you, the meditative plane that you reach where you have put all your will, effort, and dreams into something. You're maximizing the challenge, and now you got to go fight another person who's doing the same thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're not wrong at all. Like, I actually get really excited when I actually get to really wrestle someone now. Like, I know I coach at a wrestling camp. Most of the kids I work with are high school, even if they're good. I can't just beat their ass, right? Because that's not good coaching. And so it's only a few times a year where one of the guys I've coached who's now in college, they come back and we can just shake hands and we can just do battle. Like, that doesn't happen a lot to me. So, but like those, that is highly enjoyable.
What are the wisdoms that you want people to get from your book? Why did you write it?
Yeah. Okay. So I wrote it because I am restless and it was during Corona and I needed something to do. So I hit up with the MMA writer who I enjoyed the most, who wrote a couple good articles about me. I said, hey, you want to write a book? So one, I think it's fun and it's entertaining, and we kind of go through my wrestling career, MMA. But if I had to kind of like go through what made me able to do the things I was able to do, having delusional dreams, I think it's important. I think a lot of people are scared to dream that way. But like when I said I wanted to go to the Olympics at 15, dude, I wasn't good. Like, I was not good on a national level. And so to be the notion that I'm going to be better than everybody, it's like that. You know, if I would hear someone who is at my similar skill will say that, even if I coach them and I really like them, I wouldn't say, haha, good luck, buddy, but I might think it. I might think that, you know?
Would you think you're an idiot? Like, what?
I would think good luck. Like, I would maybe think like they're naive, like they don't realize how far away they are or how far behind other people they are, which, I mean, I was probably naive when I thought.
Well, the reason I say idiot is because I'm just saying, do you not know how hard this is? Do you not understand? Do you not have any self-awareness of you're not good enough and the line of people in front of you is going to be very difficult to overcome to be best in the world or best in the country?
Yes. Yeah. That's, exactly. So, that would definitely be one. Number two.
In that sport, we're filled with lunatic fighters, you know, like who are exceptional and willful as well. To be more willful than the most willful of all the people walking Earth.
Especially when you're behind them already. like, you know, kind of a few steps, many steps behind them. Yeah.
So you want to teach the audience, dream delusionally. It's okay.
Yes, it's okay. Well, I actually had this real, I had this really good debate. You know, I have a, so I teach high school kids, coach them. And I do these Mental Monday segments where we talk about mental component. And we had this really, it was good, healthy discussion, but it was like, can you set goals that are too high? And we had this debate about it. And, you know, my take is that no, because really high goals drive action, right? Your thoughts drive your actions. And if your goals are too low, like if you set a goal to be just as good as you are today, like, well, I don't need to do anything. I'm already this good, you know, or even below. What if my goals are below where I'm at today? Like, well, I could get worse and still go achieve this goal. So I need goals that like drive me. And yeah, I mean, like I'll say, I want to be a four-time NCAA champion and I want to be an Olympic gold medalist. And you know what? I came up short on those two, but I got to be a two-time NCAA champion, which most people say is pretty good. And I went to the Olympics, which most people say is pretty good. You know, so it's like, can you set your goals too high? And I think the answer to that is no. You know, their pushback was, you'll come up short. And I'm like, well, that's, yeah, you got to accept that that's part of the thing.
That's living sometimes.
Yeah, that's living.
And sometimes you can also be a two-time champion.
Yeah.
Sometimes you could go a decade in the fighting sports without losing. What does your wife find most annoying about the wrestling parts of your personality?
I grab her all the time. I'm trying to wrestle her. She's like, leave me alone. I want to wrestle.
You want to battle.
Yeah, I want to battle. So luckily, Ozzy's getting old enough where I can kind of really grab him. My 9-year-old girl, she likes to wrestle. So she's pretty combative also. I think she would say, I'm so impatient though, because I just want to go. And sometimes that I can wear on her a little bit.
Ben, pleasure talking to you. Again, the name of the book, Funky, My Defiant Path Through the Wild World of Combat Sports. Give them one story that you said it was entertaining. You said the wild world of combat sports. You have a lot of good stories. Yes. You must have encountered all sorts of unusual personalities.
Man. Oh, can I tell you a story that's not in the book? I told the other day, and I forgot how funny it was. Tyron Willie came up. We had homecoming at Mizzou. And the coach there has been there 25 years. And he was our coach also. And when he was our coach, he was super young. He had just started. And so I was trying to make all the athletes on the team feel grateful at how nice he was compared to what he was then. Coach Smith, don't get too mad at me. He's actually a Fort Lauderdale guy, so right down by here. Okay, so this one Friday. So in preseason, it was torture. Mondays, we had 7-mile runs. And then Wednesday, they would torture us in the stadium. And then we did lifting and wrestling also.
What
right?
is torture in the stadium?
The stadiums were the worst. You had to run up to the top 7 times, then 7 sprints halfway, then buddy carries, then wheelbarrows, then jumps. It was terrible. It was awful.
You to be saying that makes it a special kind of awful.
Literally the worst thing ever. The most torturous thing ever in my career, for sure. That's probably the worst. You said weight cutting. I would choose weight cutting over stadiums. I think they were torture. Okay, so this one Friday. Usually on Fridays, that was like our cool day. We would lift weights, and after lifting weights, we would go get to play this like version of football on this like on the football field, right? And so it was kind of fun. You know, we still worked hard, but it was kind of fun. So this one Friday, it's raining, and you see he's in this kind of mood, and he goes, "All right, we lifted," and he goes, "All right, everyone to the wrestling room now." And we're like, "Oh shit!" So he goes, he could get up there, and he goes, "We're not leaving until somebody quits."
Oh,
and
he starts
making us do this really, really hard workout, right? And we're working. And so everyone's like, oh, man, who's going to quit first?
Nobody wants to be the first
one. No one wants to be the first one, right? And then so we work out for a while. And all of a sudden, this dude's like, all right, I quit. And so everyone's like, yes, he quit. And Coach goes, he was going to quit anyways. We're still going. And so we had to keep going until someone else quit. Oh, just that line of like, he was going to quit anyways. And we're all like, oh,
this
no.
is terrible. You break people. It's you laugh. You laugh at torture. He laughs in the face of torture. Check out his book.
So funny.
Funky, My Defiant Path Through the Wild World of Combat Sports. Ben, good talking to you. Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.